You're listening to The Parting Shot with H. Allen Scott.
When I say the name Nikki Glaser, you're probably like, I know that name. I know that name from somewhere. Well, you do. You probably know it from stand-up. She's a very successful stand-up comedian. You probably saw her online this week because the Tom Brady roast that just happened on Netflix, you know, the one where he got angry at someone telling a joke about him, even though that's the total point of a roast. She killed it at the Tom Brady roast. Go watch that on Netflix. Go watch her performance. It's a masterclass of a stand-up comedian at a roast. It is so perfect. So you probably know her from that or her mini comedy specials or maybe stand-up on the road. She tours all the time. You also might know her from CW's F-Boy Island or the spinoff Lovers and Liars. Like, you've seen this woman's face before. Well, now you're about to see it in a way that you need to see it with her HBO comedy special, Someday You'll Die. It's brand new. It's fantastic. The way that she has evolved, I've known Nikki for a long time. I'll get into that for a second. But the way that she has evolved as a comedian is fantastic. In this new special, she's talking about motherhood and how it's not for her, the expectations of that society puts on women, and so many other things in a way that only Nikki can do. The thing with Nikki is she sort of balances this dance between raunchy, sexy comedy, you know, which sometimes can feel like, oh, it's just easy or whatever. But Nikki elevates it in a way that it's not easy. It's actually very difficult what she does. And you'll see that in the special Someday You'll Die, which is on HBO. So you need to go watch that. Also, another thing with Nikki, and what I love about her is that she's evolving as a comedian. I mean, of course, she has her podcast, the Nikki Glaser podcast, which is insanely successful. And you can both watch it and listen to it wherever you get podcasts. But she also is doing music, which is crazy to me. I never knew she had that in her. And I love this little piece of information about her. In fact, she'll have a song, a single called Someday You'll Die on the comedy special. It plays at the end of the comedy special. So stick around for that when you watch the special, because you'll hear the song at the very, very end. But the thing about Nikki is, so I don't just know Nikki in a professional sense. Nikki and I graduated high school together. We were literal children together growing up in the same small town that we come from outside St. Louis, Missouri. And I no longer live there. Nikki does live there. And she was always funny. We did a play in high school called The Musical Comedy Murders of 1940, where I played a flamboyantly gay playwright and in the closet. And she played my best friend. And you know what? It was kind of spot on. It was kind of a spot on representation of who we are and were and would become. Nikki is fantastic. I love where she's gone. I love seeing her grow as a comedian, which is why I said I've watched her grow as a comedian over the years, literally because I saw her in the very beginning. She's fantastic. And you're going to love the special Someday You'll Die. Now, when you listen to our chat, which I think is going to be a lot of fun because it really is just a chat between friends, you'll hear her call me Scott. That's my real name. So, and I did not want to correct her in calling me anything else. She knows me under my real name, Scott Honegger. My stage name is H. Allen Scott. So there you go. That's why she keeps saying Scott. Now you know my secret. Cancel me. Don't cancel me. So let's get to it because it's such a fantastic chat. And I know you're going to love Nikki as much as I love Nikki. And you need to watch Someday You'll Die. So go on and grab a snack because I will be right back with Nikki Glaser.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hey!
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. good. How are you?
Good. It's good to see you.
You too. So glad to talk to you.
I know. I love this. I was just interviewing Michelle Buteau yesterday, just chatting with her, but also recording with her. And I was like, I try to make a habit of not interviewing friends, but now two of my, like, I mean, she's also one of my oldest friends too. I mean, I met her like the first day I was in New York. So like, it's kind
really?
Of, yeah, like in 2004, it's crazy. But like, it's wild that like, where both of you have gone, but where so many of our friends have gone in terms of just like, you know, and that it's just sort of lasted all these years. I mean, do you get that? Do you kind of pinch yourself sometimes?
I think so. I guess, I don't know. I'm always like, you know, there's days where I feel like an imposter and I feel like I haven't done enough. And I feel like, how did I get here? I've tricked so many people. I'm in too deep. I can't keep this up. And then there are days where I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, I'm not the most famous. I could probably do better. I should do better. I need to achieve more. And then there are days where I'm like, yeah, that's pretty impressive. Good job. Like, it honestly, like, depends on the day. But I think, yeah, I think what I've achieved is impressive. But I kind of, I don't know, I always kind of knew that this would kind of be what it was. Like, I just kind of knew, I never thought I'd be the most famous person in the world or most successful in this thing, but I've kind of achieved exactly what I thought I would, which is like, you know, notoriety to a degree that I'm recognizable and people are fans of me. And I get to be on TV a lot. Like, I kind of always knew it. It's the only thing that makes me believe in like manifestation. Like, I think I manifested it without knowing that I did, because just back, you know, speaking of high school, like, I just, there wasn't any question that this was going to be it. There was just, the way they tell you to manifest is like, you don't just say, you know, I want to win an Oscar. You have to be like, I won an Oscar. Like, you have to think like you are, it already happened. And that's literally like the way I used to think back in high school. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
For like, when I try to manifest now, I just feel ridiculous. But in high school, I just had this, just certainty of it, of like, well, what else am I going to do? Cause I kind of think it was like that. It was like, well, if I don't achieve, the goal of being on TV regularly or being known, you know, being famous or whatever the goal used to be, I'll die. Like, I'll literally kill myself someday if that doesn't happen. And as grim as that is, that really was the reality of it. It was like, that's the only reason I'm on this earth. And now I realize that's obviously not true. And there's other things that I would enjoy doing besides this, but there was just no question. I would have to kill myself otherwise. And I just didn't want to do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be a bummer.
Yeah, I remember at one point thinking you know, when acting wasn't really a thing that I was being given a lot of accolades for. And I was like, oh, I don't think this is my thing. Like, I don't think I'm going to make this work. I remember being like, God, I have to kill myself someday. Like, that sucks. Like, I remember even thinking like, oh man, I'm going to have to do that. Well, figure out what to do in the meantime. Like, I remember having that thought, which is insane now to think about. I mean, I have that thought in other ways sometimes, but not when it comes to like, if I don't get on TV or whatever, you know,
it's
but
so
it really
interesting. Wasn't. Cause I didn't like, I mean, everyone, I'll say this in the intro, but like, you and I went to high school together. So we've known each other a very long time. And it's so interesting because I had similar thoughts in high school, but I had like that Midwest, we're both from St. Louis. So that Midwest practical sort of like, well, this is like arrogant of me to think that I should ever go in this direction or try to do these things or try to be on stage or try to talk to people for a living or whatever it is. And that I need something practical or a real job or something that people can respect me for or whatever it is. So like, I remember for like a good number of years there, I was just sort of chasing the practicality of not my dream, but a dream that maybe would make people like me. And then, even then when I started performing after I got cancer and stuff, I sort of switched and I sort of was like, well, even performing isn't the thing. I don't even know what's the thing. Like, what is the thing? And
is the thing?
It's so amazing when you get to a place like what you were saying, where you can still have those thoughts, those sort of like imposter syndrome, like what am I doing? All of those things, but also be content in your lane. Be content in sort of like what you're doing and giving to the world.
Yeah, there are times, I would say it's like 50-50 where I vacillate between feeling like an imposter and the other part feeling pretty content and being like, I don't really need much more. There's not a lot of time in my life spent being jealous of other people for career achievements. Like, I feel like I just kind of, if someone gets SNL and I, or, you know, let's say SNL is something I haven't done, that would be a nice achievement to host SNL. I just go, well, it'll happen for me. It's just not my time yet. I kind of have a more healthy reaction to that, but I do still suffer with jealousy of just people's talent. I think it's more than anything of, man, I might be able to achieve more than that person because I just work hard and I'm shifty and I can get people to, you know, maybe people hire me because they want to have sex with me. It's like whatever my mind, gymnastics my mind does of like why people give me things. It's not because I'm talented. It's because I've manipulated somehow, even though I don't do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, subconsciously I don't. But there's a part of me that just goes, you're not actually talented. And you've had to manufacture your talent and you're a charlatan. And which I saying that about myself right now doesn't make sense, but I know that is something I say to myself quite often when I get in those depressive wormholes. But I do think, you know, I don't understand how anyone who's there was just nothing else I could have done than perform. And it was narcissistic, and it is like crazy to be like, people should watch me. I'm something. And the truth is, I don't even like to watch myself.
Yeah, I don't either. I refuse.
You know,
to.
Like that doesn't make any sense that I can't. I'm, you know, for my special, HBO wants to throw a party for my friends and people to like, you know, post about it. And I don't want to do it because I'll have to watch the special with a room of people. And yeah. I can't bear to do that. I don't want to, first of all, I don't want to watch myself. I already have so much to edit the thing. It was torture, not because it was bad, but because, you know, to me, there's things I'm like, I could have done that better. Why did I stand that way? Why did I say it that way? What, you know, all the things. But to be in a room with a bunch of people and then to feel like they have to laugh because I'm there. But if I leave, they'll think that's weird. So I just don't even want to do it because I would never be someone who goes on the opening weekend of their movie to go watch it in the audience with the crowd. That is a kind of narcissism that I'm glad I don't have. I think there's a way to be proud of yourself, but I think even being proud of yourself is kind of gross. It's just like, who do you think? You just got lucky. You were born with talent, or you were born with parents that could support you enough financially so you could struggle through the lean years. Like, you're not really that special. Like, get off your high horse. Like, I really don't think anyone's that special. We're all just like lucky to be born with what we have. So I was lucky to be born with a brain that is kind of good at putting together jokes and doing stand up. And I'm lucky to live in it, be born in an age where stand up is even a thing that anyone can do, let alone a woman do. And I'm lucky that I can freely talk about sex, which is something that most people have a struggle to talk about freely. And I'm lucky that I'm in an age where women can even talk freely about sex. I got really lucky with how things lined up. Even being born a decade later, I would have been probably mystified by YouTube and TikTok and all those things. I don't think I have a brain for that. And so I was able to get in perfectly right before then. You know, I don't know if I would have been as successful 10 years later.
Interesting.
So it's really timing. I don't like to bask too much in my achievements because I'm just like, I'm just lucky.
It's so funny you say the special thing, because I was literally just saying on another podcast, something that you told me right before the pandemic. Cause I did your Sirius XM show right before the pandemic hit, literally like a month before the pandemic hit.
Oh, wow.
And you said, cause I have a horrible fear of flying, and you literally said something to me that has stayed with me since then. You were like, you're not special enough to die on a plane. Like you are not
an asshole.
I know it was. You're very much an asshole, but it was lovely of you to say. It was because it has helped me.
I do
me.
Say that to people when they think they're going to die in something crazy. I'm just like, I like turning someone's fear into a narcissism because we all fear being narcissists more than whatever it is we fear otherwise. So as soon as you go, it's none of your business what people think about you. You go, oh no. Oh my God. You think I'm being nosy, and then all of a sudden, like, I stop caring what people think about me because I'm more worried about being a nosy person.
Yeah.
So I kind of I use that device a lot.
Well, it works.
I'm glad it stuck with you.
It has, because I've been flying a lot ever since we could fly again. I've been flying a lot for different things and stuff, and it has helped me in that and Adele. Adele. Adele is my plane crash soundtrack now. She is.
Oh, well, yeah. She's your plane ride, not crash. Yes, you're not going to crash.
Yes, yes. Well, I need to ask you about the special. So speaking of dying, someday you'll die, which is a perfect transition. I'm really proud of myself.
Yeah,
for that.
You have, like
you said, you've been doing a lot more television, you know, with FBoy Island, all the things, and like you've been doing other things. So you have a lot of new people coming to the show, probably seeing your stand up, maybe for the first time. So what should someone who doesn't only knows you from sort of like social media or maybe the podcast or maybe like TV, what can they expect from the special?
You know, it's just very, I think, perfectly my sense of humor. My podcast is the most me thing out there. It's like, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not performative at all. I look like shit on it. I can't even believe the hours of YouTube video of me doing a podcast, just looking puffy faced, no makeup, just like unrecognizable. It's just raw. That's just like, I don't to do it twice a week or four times a week when I used to do it. It was just too much. I couldn't put in more than I can't perform. I have to just be myself. Otherwise that will drain me. So the podcast is very much me. And then I think the stand up is just that with jokes, you know, like I just refined it with jokes. And so it's a lot of just like honest, harsh truths. Like really, maybe I never want to say offensive or like raunchy or like pushing the envelope, because that's all kind of speaks to some kind of comedian who wants to like rile people up or offend people. But I mean, I guess some people could be offended by things I say, but I really don't. I think it's just like really honest and really funny, precise, acute jokes throughout it. But it's about depression. It's about, the desire to have kids and how I don't have that desire, and exploring why do people want kids? What is it? And it comes down to I think it's narcissistic, and that's okay. We look in the mirror cause we're narcissistic. Like everything we do is based on, I'm a narcissist. I'm just not narcissist in that way, or I don't have that narcissistic trait, but it's just exploring like, why does everyone in my life want kids? Why don't I want kids? Like, and it's about feeling what I feel a lot, and which is envy of like what other people want. My boyfriend always says, like, I've never known someone who wants to like things they don't like. Like that, I don't want to have kids, but I want to have kids. I don't want to buy a home, but I want to buy a home. I don't want to learn home decor or care about, you know, thread counts on sheets, but I want to, because it seems like that's what makes a woman the most desirable and like feminine. And that's like a real woman that smells good and her home smells good. And you walk and you go, what's that smell? And she's like, that's just my scent. And you go, oh, really? Like, no one's ever told me I smell good, literally in my life, ever. No one's ever been like hugged me and gone, you smell good. That is a thing I know other girls get. I'm just never that girl. And I'm already, and speaking of it, getting this like kind of like worked up because I have this anger in me that I wasn't, you know, born lucky in those ways, that I see other girls don't struggle with these decisions as much as me. They don't struggle about marrying some guy that they fight with all the time. I'm like, why would you commit to that forever? Yeah. You guys aren't your life. How could this guy is an alcoholic? Why would you ever sign up for that forever? And I know there's divorce, but like, don't you think about that? Even like how hard that's, why would you have kids with this guy? Like, I just don't understand why people make the choices they make. And not that I want to marry an alcoholic or I want to buy a home with a guy and all these things I see my friends doing, but maybe I want some of the ignorance that I see they have, because it does seem blissful to plan a wedding and believe that your life is going to be happily ever after and get pregnant and think of all the things your baby is going to be that they're not going to be, and kind of ignore all the things that are going to be hard about that kind of life. Mm-hmm. And of course I've done that with my own career and glamorized it and daydreamed about what's going to be like when I have this career that I do have now. And now all I do is bitch about it. So I relate to motherhood in that way. But the special is really just me trying to figure out at the precipice of 40, like, why am I still, why can I still not be the girl that I've always wanted to be, the girl that I admired in high school? If we're going back that far, I'm almost stuck in high school of not really liking who I am, struggling with trying to be my authentic self, but also like molding to what other people want of me. Because in the special, I also highlight, you know, the vanity that goes on in this business and just being a woman in general. And it happens to men too, on a grander scale than it ever has, but it's still like really a female issue of like having to look pretty and young, and especially in Hollywood, and how this mixed messaging of like, no, it's cool to be big now. And Hollywood loves big women. You can get fat. And it's like, really? Because yeah. I don't really see that many fat women on TV. You have five. Is that really? And they go, no, that's, we love them. And you go, I think you're full of shit. I think that I don't see old women on TV. I don't see fat women on TV. I don't see women who are outspoken and honest on TV. It seems that we still have to fit in this cookie cutter mold, but it's even worse now because they're not telling you you have to. They're telling you you can be anyone you want, and yeah. It's not true. Yeah. I'm living it. I don't get work if I don't look a certain way. I know I don't, and I know I do get work when I look a certain way. So when I am in my late 30s and feeling the effects of aging, I just feel, the special is not angry, but I just feel confused about how I'm supposed to love myself in a world that is still giving me the messaging that you kind of shouldn't. And when you're rich enough to afford all the things to look younger and be beautiful, then what? Then you better do them. And if you don't, you're failing in a new way. And not to say that I'm like, it's so hard to be rich or something, but it was nice when I couldn't afford Botox to be like, I guess I'm just going to be wrinkled. And now it's like, yeah. Well, you could look like a Kardashian. Why aren't you? Yeah. And it's like, well, I don't have a month to take off to go get a facelift. I really don't have that in my schedule. Would I probably make up for that lost work in getting a facelift with all the work I would get after that subtle facelift where everyone would go, Nikki just looks like she's been drinking more water.
Yeah.
Probably. I'd make up that work.
I have a friend who did that. I have a friend who did that.
The face work is amazing now. And I explore that as well, of like people making you feel bad about getting face work done. What is wrong about any, you know, when Meg Ryan, you know, quote unquote, fucked up her face. Yeah. It's like all people can
or
say
Renee
about her
Zellweger
now.
Or like,
yeah,
any
you
of
know
those.
What?
Yeah.
Fuck you all. She was trying to stay young for you. Oh. She was trying to stay in movies. She wasn't trying to look in a way that you would make fun of her. She was actually trying to do the opposite and avoid that. Yeah. And so sorry that she got the wrong advice from the wrong doctors. And now what is, now she's punished. Now she can't work at all because everyone only makes, now she's just known for fucking up her face. So you can't really win. And I'm at this kind of crossroads of thinking like, okay, now it's time for my early 40s facelift. Yeah. Here it comes. Like, but, or do I just listen to everyone who says just no age, like, you know, Frances McDormand. And it's like, yeah, but there's one Frances McDormand. We let one old woman be like, yeah. I'm going to be me. Yeah. Jamie Lee Curtis decided to be herself in her late 50s. That's when she decided I'm not doing any more face work. It's like, it's still not the norm. Yeah. And I just call bullshit on everyone's like acceptance of everyone's beautiful. Mm-hmm. No, they're not.
I mean, I've said it.
Think of it.
Friends laugh at me for this, but I always say I play the lottery just to get plastic surgery someday. I literally, as soon as I make some money, there is so much. You won't even recognize me. I'll be a different person.
Honestly, you're not wrong to do that. Like, there are studies that prove, I took this out of my special, but I'm like, there is a study that proves that being an unattractive person is, you get more discrimination being like a scientifically ugly person. Mm-hmm. And neither of us are that, but like, let's take a person who is like disfigured in some way that, or just like, you know, unattractive versus people who are attractive. They make, I think it's like 63 cents on the dollar that an attractive person makes, which is worse than sexism, racism, any kind of other pay disparity. It's worse than all of that. But people who are not, you know, beautiful don't have any rights because no one admits that anyone's ugly. Everyone's beautiful. Yeah. Yes. So if people say I'm ugly, we go, no, you're beautiful. And it's like, let people feel ugly. If I want to feel ugly, yes, I know I'm not as ugly as other people. And yes, I'm very grateful for the things that I do aesthetically have that are pleasing and, you know, fit whatever the patriarchy determines as beauty.
Yeah.
But there are other things that I don't have that make me feel less than. And I feel like I should be able to bitch about them a little bit because life is better if you're pretty.
Yeah.
Life's easy.
I mean,
and I resent that I even have to have a sense of humor because I'm not as pretty as I want to be. Like the thing that I have, it's only built up feeling less than.
I always used my sense of humor to make people find, to distract them from me not being as pretty or as skinny or as whatever from other people.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like I would always,
yes.
I mean, but I mean, you and I definitely have that in common in that like you use humor as a shield to sort of block people from getting to know the real you sometimes.
It absolutely comes from that. I mean, hot people who have been hot since high school are dull. They just usually are. And it doesn't matter that they're dull because they're pretty and we don't really need much of them. You've never looked at a sunset and been like, well, it doesn't make me laugh, so let's go. You know, like,
I will
we don't
say,
need
people from our high school
thing.
Didn't, we're pretty, but like, we didn't create the prettiest bunch of people, which I'm proud of. I'm proud that we have a graduating class that's kind of fugly in a beautiful, real, normal way. Don't you think?
There's still one girl that I think was like the pretty, like Brittany Burke was probably the prettiest.
You're dropping names.
Oh, well, I would hope that someone would drop my name if I was being talked about the prettiest person I've ever seen in my life. I remember in sixth grade just being like, what is that? What do I even do? How do I can't even, that's her face without makeup in sixth grade. Like, it just, I remember, I don't know about you, but, and I'm more sensitive to this stuff. I've definitely talked to my girlfriends who don't care as much about their looks. And maybe it's because I am in this business where I have to look at a fucking picture of myself every day. And I'm not just talking about on Zoom where you look like shit and everyone does. I'm talking about like where I try to look my best with hours of hair and makeup. And I still like don't look like I want to look. Mm-hmm. And that's a really sad moment when like experts in your business have spent 5 hours looking, working on your face and hair and your style and everything, and you still don't look good. It's like, oh no, it's always nice that like, if you're doing your own makeup, you're like, well, I'm not,
I can
there's
pass,
some room.
You know?
Oh yeah. I would be way hotter if experts were called it. No,
I'm
you
pretty
wouldn't.
For there's, Cheesecake there's Factory. Yeah. You know, like I always,
there is a moment. There is a moment where I don't know. And I'm sure you had it too, where you're just like, oh, wait, shoot. I don't think I'm as like attractive as I think people have told me I am, or like,
oh,
and that this might affect how much people love me and pay attention to me. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, I've explored it in other specials and it's been like probably the nucleus for most of my material. That was a pivotal moment for me, really, at an early age of like, okay, the world isn't fair and it is definitely favors pretty people. And if I can't do that, I got to find another way in. And that was being funny.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, the other thing I want to ask you about is just this iteration of F-Boy Island and Lovers and Liars and how that's sort of grown into a thing. And you do have what I love about, I mean, you've always been sort of like raunchy, risque in your comedy. Like you've always had that. There's always been a sexual element, which I love. Mm-hmm. And there's like a real art form to publicly being funny sexually. Like there really is an art, because you can go low and go really tacky, but you've never really done that. And so your brand has sort of reached this point where you can have a show like Lovers and Liars and have people respect you for it and find it's funny and go to it and stuff. So I want to know, like, what about that iteration of your career excites you?
Well, first of all, I just want to say thank you for that compliment, because I also about being able to make raunchy stuff like more cerebral. Like someone said it recently to me of like, if you think that Nikki's humor is dumb, then you're dumb. Like if you think it's like just dumb sex jokes, then you're like not smart, because you're not getting it, because I am a smart person. I know that I am. I'm not the smartest person by any means. I'm not the smartest comedian by any means, but I am not doing sex jokes just because it's easy. And people always laugh about sex because it's so naughty, or because I want to titillate or anything. It's just because that's what I'm drawn to talk about. And I feel like I have been able to present sexual material in a different way than it's been done before comedically. Or maybe I've just ripped someone off and I'm not thinking of that right now. But I think with this layer of my career of hosting a reality show, it was just another opportunity for me to be myself. Like I'm trying to really keep I do so much that I try to keep it pretty easy. When I agree to do something, I'm like, how hard is this going to be? And really the show is a cakewalk, because it's me. I'm not involved in the planning of the show or the production. I'm a producer on it, but I really don't really have any hand on that, because I like to play the game with the contestants and not know who is who, or who's there for the right reason, who's there for the wrong reasons. So I just get to walk into scenes and be like, you know, what's going on today? Like, I just get to like catch up. Like I'm catching up with my friends. I don't have to memorize lines. I have like an in-ear thing that if I have any lines I have to deliver, they just tell me and then I repeat them. It's so easy. And then I do write scripts right before, you know, eliminations, and we write jokes. So that's a part I like about it. That it's like, it's always last minute. And that's how I work in my career anyway, is like, I'm packing for a month right now and my flight's in 2 hours. And I'm like in the middle of packing. I wait till last minute to do everything.
Same. And what is it about us? Why do we do that?
I think it's fear of being bad,
yeah,
and not actually feeling like you're good. Because if you tried really hard, like I said, if you have all the hair and makeup team do it, and then you get to the end and you're like, this is still not good. It's like, well, this is the best it could be. But if you start late and procrastinate when it's bad, if it's not as good as it could be, you go, oh, well, if I would have started sooner, it would be really good. Yeah. And you always leave that kind of space to be like, I'm not as bad as I... It's just a fear of being bad, I think, or of being letting a letdown in terms of your talent.
Yeah.
At least that is for me, but I do wait for the last second for everything. And it works for stand-up. I mean, that's why I like stand-up yes. is because it's live and I don't have to review it. I don't have to go over and look over what I did. And I don't have to really think before I go on stage that much anymore. I used to have to prepare a lot more and it was harder, but now I can just walk on stage and start talking. And the jokes I've had most of
the most freeing. I mean, that's where I am too, with just, if I am ever doing anything, performing or any sort of thing, I it has to be last minute, anything that I do, because I have to hear the room. I have to hear what people are talking about, because I know I'm going to go out there and only refer to those things I've heard the last 30 minutes of the show.
Or really?
That's, and it just becomes, or even on a podcast or anything like that, like, I want to come in fresh and not prepare, just because, I mean, I prepare, I'm a professional, yeah. but I don't, like, want to prepare, over-prepare, because there's a spontaneity to the dialogue that I think creates the magic.
I wish that were the reason I did it, because I think you're right. I think I do benefit from that spontaneity, but the reason I do it is solely because I'm scared to look at my talent and be alone with it and have to like prepare something and learn that I'm not as good as I want to be when I prepare. Yeah. So if I never prepare, I always can convince myself I'd be better if I did. And that's always why I do it. But it's worked for my career. Like, I guess I've been good on the fly. When I do prepare for things and I've been forced to, I'm always so much better. Like, I would be so much better if I worked in the ways that I know I need to. But I don't need to be much more famous. I don't need more money. Yeah. Here in St. Louis, I'm doing the Fox Theater. I'm like, that's the pinnacle. I don't need to do the Enterprise Center. I don't need to do some arena that I don't even like to see comedians in arenas. I know that would be millions of dollars in one night or whatever. And that would be or hundreds of thousands of dollars in one night, which would be a cool thing to just be like, I made that much. I don't really need that. I'm a single girl and I live in an apartment. I have no interest in home ownership. I don't like cool cars. I don't like cool bags. And I'm not trying to sound cool by being like, I don't know. I'm just so easy. I'm a different kind of girl. I don't have kids. I have parents that I want to get into a good nursing home. Yeah. I have a niece and nephew, but they're being taken care of pretty well by their parents. I don't really need, I'd like to maybe give to charity, and maybe that's a reason to like strive for more money and more fame. But mm-hmm. I'm just kind of getting into a point where I'm just, you know, you hear every person who's achieved any level of fame be like, I thought this would be the answer to happiness and it's not.
Yeah.
And so that is not a new thing that I'm saying, but it is true. And I'm not interested in like learning it over and over. Like, yeah. I kind of got the message and I would like to sustain what I have now, but I beat myself up a lot for like, you should have done better on that thing. But I'm like, well, then if you did, more offers would come in and your life would get so much more hectic and you have to like work more. And I kind of don't want to work more. Like, I'm a little overworked. And that's the business, though. You have to say yes to everything. And you have to keep it. Once you get $1 million, you got to get $10 million. Mm-hmm. Then you got 20 million, then 80. And then you need to be a 100 millionaire. That's then, then it's $1 billion. And then then Taylor Swift just made the billionaire list.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, I heard someone going over the list on a radio show and they were like, but she has the least amount of all the billionaires. And I'm like, oh, great. Now let's punish her because she didn't earn enough. Yeah. Like, what is this? What are we doing?
I've always said the best thing I took from chemo or anything is the ability to say no to things. To say no if I know it's not for me or to a thing or to a whatever. I can say no so easily and it's so freeing. Also, I wanted to say that the thing that I do when I, because I get that when I don't feel like I'm not prepared enough or I don't look good enough or all the things. There's a line from the Julia Child movie, Julia, Julia, that I always, always quote, where her and her sister are looking in a mirror and they've just gotten ready for this party or whatever it is. And they both say, not bad. And then Julia Child leans into her sister and goes, but not great. And it's sort of like something that sticks in my head of like, that's my life. I present myself and I'm fine.
Oh my God.
I'm fine at what I do. But I'm never great. And that's okay. You know?
Oh,
and
God.
It feels good.
It hits me so hard. Like, Dude, I think you're hitting it right on the head. Like, I want that kind of like acceptance of the fact that I will never be as great as I want to be or as that I think I could be, mm-hmm. you know? But there is I think that is what keeps me going is this deep fear of being average or being a nobody. And I think that it is only perpetuated by the fact that I don't have kids, that my parents, who are the people that love me unconditionally and the only ones that love me unconditionally, to my knowledge, besides maybe some of my best friends, but in that deep, authentic blood way,
yeah.
If once they're dead, I don't have anyone loving me in that way. And I think that's why some people chill out trying to find fame after they have kids and stuff, because they're like, this is what it's about. And I don't really know what it's about yet beside the fame thing. I know that fame isn't what it's about. And I do spend a lot of time with my family, but I fear when my parents die because I do not know why I'll do this anymore. Well, it really is just to be like, Mom, Dad, guess what I did today? Like, I still do that shit.
Yeah.
I'm 40. I'm about to be 40. And that's why I do things in life, is to be able to tell my parents.
Yeah.
And so that is, that's going to be a big turning.
I fear when your parents, I fear when your parents die too, because I enjoy them very much on social media. So I feel like you're not alone in that. Well, I want to wrap things up with, one thing that surprised me, and you don't know this about me. I know this because, we never experienced that part of our friendship, but I hate live music and I hate concerts. And so watching you flying to multiple Taylor Swift concerts both thrilled me and concerned me and gave me anxiety at the same time, because I just thought of all of the things you were going through just to be in a concert, and that seemed like my literal hell.
Oh my God. If I was watching myself, I'd be like, who? This girl like is such a go-getter. Like, she loves doing that. I might be jealous of the person that I portray myself to be when I'm at those shows, because I'd be like, wow, she's so like, she does stuff and she like has a passion. Yeah, I'm not the person that likes crowds either. I don't like that whole scene either, but there's something about being around Taylor Swift fans that feel that's my family.
I mean, I flew Southwest to Taylor Swift. So,
oh, I'll fly Southwest. I will fly Spirit. I'll fly in a hot air balloon, which I'm terrified of. I'll do anything to be at a Taylor Swift concert. That's the one thing that's brought my life like so much joy. And, you know, I don't want to ever compare it to like, that's my reason for living, my kids or whatever. But people say that about their dogs and no one gets mad. Yeah. Taylor Swift, the fact that she has like albums that are coming out that I need to be around for, some days gets me out of bed of like, got to keep going. Like, Tortured Poets is coming out April 19th. Got to live till then. Like, yeah. I becoming a Swiftie was just a crucial moment, a part of my life. And she's a part of my life every single day. Like, it's an identity. I resonate with being a Swiftie more than maybe a comedian or even a woman.
I love that. I love
most
that.
Days.
I love that.
I mean, definitely the woman thing.
Well, Nikki, I love you so much. I'm so proud of you. I'm glad I can call you a friend, a longtime friend, one of my oldest friends, which is crazy. I love that you just outed to the public my actual age, which I never do. So,
you skipped many grades.
I did. I'm actually very young. It's crazy that I was 2 when we graduated.
Like, yeah, you, I think, were 8 when we were in 10th grade.
Uh-huh.
It was crazy. Uh-huh. But you've always been that advanced.
Definitely. Well, thank you again. And let me know when you're in Los Angeles and we should we'll get together.
I
when
would
we
love
can.
To yeah. hang out again.
Yeah, let's have.
Good to see you. Can I call you Scott, or is that off the table?
Well, no, I mean, nobody does except for people who know me from St. Louis, which is, it's just not a, thing.
Is that
but
okay?
You can, but you can, yes.
I can not call you Scott, but it
Okay, good.
As long as it isn't like, oh, that's, don't call me. Okay.
No.
I love you so much.
Love you.
Thank you for this interview. This is so nice.
Let me know what you thought of today's episode. I'm H. Allen Scott on everything, not Scott. You cannot call me Scott. Only people who know me from St. Louis can call me that. Thank you. And leave a little rating and review wherever you're listening to this episode. I would really appreciate it. And for the latest news and podcasts, head to Newsweek.com and follow Newsweek on all the social platforms. And while you're there, subscribe to Newsweek and subscribe to my newsletter, For the Culture. You can also get a audio exclusive bonus every single week if you're a Newsweek subscriber with my new podcast called H. Allen Scott's Hot Take. It's like short little episodes where
I basically give you a hot take on what's poppin' in pop culture. So go on, subscribe to Newsweek at newsweek.com. Until then, watch something fun and have a great day.